So, 30. The third and fourth essences, the Gita Rahasya and the Charan Shloki. Bhagavad Gita 1865 and 1866. The essence of devotion and the essence of surrender. Focus on the purport of Bhagavad Gita 1865. The most confidential part of knowledge is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna and always think of him and act for him. One should not become an official meditator. Right? In other words, just meditating on the Lord is not actually enough. You know, it means it's a step, because instead of meditating on sense gratification, you meditate on the Lord. But now, what's the difference between meditating on this way, meditating on the Lord, and meditating on sense gratification? It means, of course, besides one being material, one being spiritual, what's the actual... the reason that meditation is not here approved as a long-term process?
Because it's about the process and not about Krishna.
Yeah, okay. But in the other one, you're thinking, you're meditating on Krishna, so it's about Krishna.
Yeah.
This is the question, why you do this? Why you meditate on Krishna? For your own sense.
Okay, yeah. Okay, for your own sense gratification. But let's say you're, because you appreciate him. Let's just say it is positive.
On the neutral stage, I mean, it's not dynamic.
It's not dynamic, right? Meditating on sense gratification is dynamic. Maybe wrong, but it's dynamic. Right? You know, I'm just saying, just like, let's say, you have a lazy person, he absolutely does nothing. So you would be more happy if he was doing something, even though it was nonsense, because then at least you could correct it. You understand? So the idea is, you're meditating on sense gratification. Therefore, it is, it's active. If there's a relationship, there's interaction, there's emotions, there's a whole thing. Yes.
But if we say that we meditate on sense gratification, meaning that we don't do anything.
No, but what are you meditating on?
What will happen?
But you're meditating on the activity, but meditating on Krishna, you just think of the static form. Just think of this, or just think of that.
You mean on the level of I'm
going to
drink, if it happens?
No. It's just, the yogi only meditates on super soul. There's no activity. We're not talking about the devotee thinking about how Krishna's with Mother Yashoda and things like that, because that's devotional service. That's remembering. Does that make sense? Because then we're remembering the activities. So just being a yogi where one's just meditating on the Lord, remembering the Lord, you could also take it that you remembered him, nice, but is it changing your activity? Right? Because remember, this is confidential. Gita Rahasya means the hidden. Meaning is that, because we're always talking about, like, Purusha Shukta, it's all about how the Lord is within everything. So, mention it. You can see here. It means before this year's course, it wouldn't have meant anything. But now you hear it, it's very easy, very interesting. So, this is the... Shanti. Purusha Shukta. Okay, from the first verse. Lord Hari, as the universal form, has unlimited heads pervading everywhere, and thus he knows everything. Lord Hari has unlimited eyes pervading everywhere, thus he sees everything. Lord Hari, as the universal form, has unlimited feet pervading everything, thus he is able to go anywhere. In fact, after thus pervading everything, Lord Hari has expanded beyond all this by 10 fingers. It is said that the Virat Rup, the Lord of Immortality, after having pervaded all places, then pervaded all times, past, present, and future, Lord Hari became the Virat Rup only to facilitate the living entity's desires for sense gratification. All these are his glories, but the Virat Rup is so much greater than that. This mortal world, with all the universes and living entities, is no more than 1/4 of his creation. The other 3/4 consists of the spiritual world, which is free from death. 1/4 of the cosmic manifestation is this material world, but the other 3/4 are the spiritual world. This world has been created again and again. Therefore, it is sometimes manifested and sometimes unmanifested. From that Lord, the Virat, universe was born, and in that Virat, Purusha, the supersoul of the universe, was born. Having appeared, the Virat Purusha grew and produced the earth and bodies of the jivas. The demigods, being the first beings manifested, performed a mental sacrifice to complete the creation. For this they used the Virat Purush, the raw ingredient of the material world, as the components of sacrifice. Spring was the ghee, summer was the wood for fuel, and autumn was the offering. In that sacrifice, the kusa grass pingerly strewn around the fire for protection from rakshasas were 7, the 7 Vedic poetic meters, and the fuel sticks numbered 21, 12 months, 5 seasons, 3 worlds, and the sun. The demigods who were performing the mental sacrifice tied up the Virat Purusha to offer him into the fire just like an animal. Purusha, the first being, was thus sitting on kusa grass. The devatas, sadhyas, and rishis sprinkled him with water and performed a mental sacrifice using him as the offering. From that sacrifice, where everything in the universe was sanctified, yogurt and ghee was produced, along with other nourishing foodstuffs. Also, the animals of the air, forest, and village were created. From that ultimate sacrifice are Sarvahuta, the Rik hymns, Sama, musical poetry, and Yajus, prose portions of the Vedas appeared, along with the 7 Vedic meters. From that sacrifice appeared horses and other animals with 2 sets of teeth. Cows, goats, and sheep were also manifested. In that mental sacrifice, when they divided up the Virat Purush, how many parts did they make? What was stated about his face, his arms, his thighs, and his feet? The face of the Virat Purusha became the Brahmanas. The 2 arms are made into Kshatriyas. The thighs of the Virat Purusha became the Vaishyas. And his feet, and from his feet, the Shudras were born. The moon was born from his mind, and the sun was born from his 2 eyes. From his mouth were born Indra and Agni, and from his breath, Vayu was born. From his navel came the Antariksha, the space between heaven and earth. And from his head, the heavens arose. The earth appeared from his feet, and from his ears, the 10 directions arose. In this way, the worlds were created. I know that wise, great Virat Purush, effulgent as the sun, who is beyond the darkness of ignorance. After having wisely distinguished the different natures of the living entities, he addressed them by their names, qualities, forms, natures, and functions. Brahma, having explained this to Indra as he had realized it, Indra conveyed it to the living entities in all 4 directions. One who knows the Virat Purusha in this way becomes immortal even during this life on earth. There is no other method to reach the final destination. In this way, the demigods conducted a mental sacrifice using the Virat Purusha to manifest the primeval creation. The great souls, by similar mental worship, attain the same place of happiness where the sadhyas and demigods, the first worshippers, now dwell. The Uttar Anurvag means it's like a conclusory, but still part of the Purusha Shukta. The Virat Purusha had appeared as a result of the need for interaction, which arose from the 5 primeval elements, Panchabhuta. He gives his material form to the living entities, and they entered into it. The Lord also entered into their hearts. Thus I understand that the Lord displayed his universal form at the beginning of creation. Right. So there are three forms of the virat mentioned in the commentaries. One, that born from the elements means the body. That born from rasa, the need for a relationship. Right. So that would be the subtle, or the interactives, the motions and everything felt, the potencies. And third, anna, desire for enjoyment. And three, that which enters the living entities. So the body is the one manifestation of virat purusha. The desire for interactive enjoyment, that's the second form. And the third is paramatma, that enters into the heart of the living entities. I know that purusha who shines like the sun is situated beyond the darkness of the material realm. One who thus knows the purusha becomes immortal even in this material world. Other than this, there is no path for liberation. The Lord of all living entities, the Virat Purush, enters into the body of every living entity. Although he is unborn, he is manifest, born in everything. The great and wise sages understand that the source of the Virat Purusha is the spiritual world, the abode of light emanating from the body of Lord Krishna. That abode is the goal of even Lord Brahma and his sons. He empowers the demigods and maintains them with care. He is also the first being who reappeared from the demigods. Because reappeared means the pura anhita, right? So he's empowering behind, but he's also the support, and he's what they are manifesting. Because we said the forms and all that, the interactions, that's also him. So he's before them. He is the cause of their being able to perform their offices, and he is what they manifest, right? By his power. We offer our obeisances unto our beloved Lord, who is the created son of Lord Brahma, right? Because the creation is actually Krishna. So that way then Krishna is Brahma's son. But Krishna was before Brahma, and Brahma came from him, so he's Brahma's father. Right? So here's the principle where one becomes born from one's wife as one's son. Does that make sense? That's where the principle comes from. So that's why one has to deal with the sun nicely, because you're dealing with yourself. Right? That's what Mani was saying, right? In people who you have to deal with, the father is Prajapati, the mother is earth, this and that, but the sun is your own, is yourself. Although the demigods gave birth to the celebrated Lord, as was described earlier, the Virat Purush nonetheless keeps them under control. Right? This is all those things that he walks, he does not walk. Mm-hmm. Right? One who knows this is a Brahmana, and he may similarly control the material nature and the demigods according to this principle. In other words, you're not controlled by the material nature. If you understand how the Virat Purush is, that you're actually not controlled, you're in control of. That doesn't mean like God, but it means they don't affect you. You decide you want to do this for Krishna, that's not under the mode, so that means you're controlling the demigod. The demigods make that work, but why is it working? Not because of the modes. It means not because of your control. They're controlling you. You're getting them to do what you want to do, but it's for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So if there's pride, then that's the modes. No pride, then it works. That's the thing. You can't have your cake and eat it. I'm controlling the demigods, and then you're controlled by the demigods. If you're not thinking I'm controlling the demigods, then you are. That's just the way it works. Right? That's feminine. So get used to it. The goddess of shyness and the goddess of fortune are your wives, right, to the Virat Purush. Day and night are your sighs, the constellations are your body, and the Ashwinis are your mouth. Please grant our innermost desires. Please grant this particular desire. Please grant all of our desires. Right? So shyness and the goddess of fortune. So opulence and shyness, they go together. Right? So it's more feminine, the more opulence, the more shyness is there. Right? Some examples. So that's feminine. So we see here, so this is giving these principles. That means the whole Veda expands from this, right? So this is describing how God has entered into everything and everything's functioning because of him. But this is coming from someone higher, right? So the path to get there is using this, but the point is it's not enough. You can't just understand the Virat Purusha, understand how this is Krishna, the potencies of Krishna, and that's the end of it. You'll get liberated. You'll come to the platform of the Shanta Rasa, but the point is it's relationship that's important, because relationship is there in the material world. One of the forms of the universal form is the need for relationship. Mm. Right? So the form that you... Relationship is necessary, right? So you need a body to do that. But how you as the soul will be able to interact and experience relationships by engaging the body, that the super soul then controls. Right? Does that make sense? So that means if you're just meditating, you're not getting... Where's the need for interaction? Mm. It's not complete. Mm. Because if this is a reflection of that, it means the need for interaction is there. So that means he himself is in everyone's heart because they're always thinking about him. So the meditation is there. Mm. Right? And his potency has expanded all the forms in everything in the spiritual world. Right? So what's the... Why is all that happening? Why is there a creation here?
Desire
for interaction. Right? So that's why it's not enough that is you just become an official meditator. An official meditator means that's what you do. No, meditation is part of what a devotee does. He's always meditating on the Lord, but he's not an official meditator, because the official meditator is exclusive, that's all he does. Right? So in this case, he's meditating on the Lord, but he's engaged in activity because of the need for interaction. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. So this is the rahasya, or the hidden point. Right? Remember before it was that it says the teacher is teaching one the Veda, or teaching one, you know, some aspect of knowledge. Right? But the point is the higher form of teaching is to understand what is the hidden meaning. You understand? And now, what is this hidden meaning? The hidden meaning is that surrender to Krishna in relationship, not something metaphysical. The metaphysical is where you start. Right? That's the beginning. Metaphysical means whatever you're looking for in the creation, that's God. You know, the mechanics of how the modes of nature work, or how, you know, thinking, feeling, willing are happening, or the control and attachment. So that is, of course, hidden, but it's not the essence of that hidden element. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So most of the time when people say, oh, we'll give you the essence, mm-hmm. you know, the hidden meanings, all they're going to explain is metaphysical stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, on the spoon, okay, you have the yajna spoon, the small one. So the small spoon, if you look at it carefully, there's a partition down the middle. In the Samveda spoons. In other spoons you don't necessarily see it. But there's a partition down the middle. Right? So then you could say the hidden meaning is that is the nostrils of Varaha, right? Because he's the yajna purusha. Does that make sense? So that's his nostrils, and the other one that looks like this, the big one, right? That's his lip, his tongue, right? Does that make sense? Because it's like the elephant. You know, it's the elephant. It's that got that round, and then it goes like that. So that's what that bigger spoon looks like. Does that make sense? Right? So we can see, oh wow, that's far out. See, you know, but that's not actually the rahasya. The rahasya is that Varaha is the Lord of sacrifice, so it means giving everything to the Lord. In other words, your body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. That's the actual rahasya. The other is metaphysical. Yes, it's more subtle. It may not be so obvious. Does that make sense? So from that, then, in Prabhupada's teachings, what is he giving us? The hidden meaning. Right? And the amazing thing is because the hidden meaning is what's connected to the soul. So everybody understands the hidden meaning if it's given in the proper parampara. Now the metaphysical, not necessarily. Right? Because that takes some training, some study. So it's not that everybody catches this. Does that make sense? Like that. So this is yes.
Can we say that meditation is in order to performed activities of the relationship properly.
But it's just meditation means if you're always absorbed in something, then you're going to act according to that. But here it says he uses the word official meditator. He doesn't say, you know, one should not meditate on me.
No.
He said official meditate, because a yogi just sits and meditates. He doesn't act. But we see it's when these yogis realize the super soul and surrender to him, then they stop their yogic astanga yoga process and get up and do devotional service. Does that make sense? They don't leave it at that. That's why the yogis are on Brahmaloka, and they stay there until the end of the life of Brahma, because it's not enough. Is that it? Yeah.
Yes. According to what we said, that meaning karmis is still better than yogis and
yogis. No. We're not saying that. We're saying is that if this is a reflection, then the point is there's a need. Everything one does is a need for interaction. One may say it's something else. You're just being practical. But it's just like they're just being practical. But what is the need of feeling sovereignty over the whole planet, that you have to take, you know, the peoples of your country and march into the next one? But what's the need? I mean, that country's going on, your country's going on. You know, unless it was in a previous war, there was an essential area of your country. You know, it had all the water and grains and all that, and they've taken it. Plus, they also have facility in their country. Plus, they've taken yours. They're greedy. Then you get it back. Okay, but then that makes your country works nice. But if your country works, has everything it needs, what's the need of being more? Right? You know, but they'll say it's practical. No, it's not. It's just emotion. It's just the need for interaction. That's all. That's the bottom line. Just you like to do it big, you know? You know, like the guy's walking down the street, you know, and points out to his friend, yeah, that's my shop over there, you know, like that, you know, the little thing like that, little groceries, vegetables in the front, you know, like that, next to all the other, you know, 20 of them like that, and he's happy, you know, but some other guy, the big guy, he wouldn't be comfortable like that, like, you know what I'm saying? You know, he would want to, you know, you go down to one of those fancy streets and point at one of those shops, you know. And that, and even better is you have a whole chain of them, or you have the fashion house, you know. Does that make sense? It's the same thing. It's just a matter of how big or how small. You know, there's a pile of dirt in the backyard, and one of the kids says, "I'm in charge of this," you know, and then they get up and push each other off. You know, who's the lord of this pile of dirt? You understand? So everything comes back to interaction, that's all. So even the guy says, no, I want to get this done. It's just being practical, you know, like that. I want to finish this, but the reason is why does he want to finish that? He's writing this email, right? And the lady has walked into the room, right? But he has one sentence to go, right? So instead of stopping and interacting with the lady, he'll want to finish that one sentence. But the lady is getting upset. I came, you didn't interact. And he says, he's thinking, this is all just emotion. But I was doing something practical. But why does he want to finish it? For the feeling of accomplishment. You understand? Because the point is that sentence, if it's written now, or written after 3 hours, the computer actually couldn't care less. Neither could your server, you know? You know, neither could anybody else. Does that make sense?
Plus, the reader might not respond in 2 months anyway.
Yeah, of course. That's also there. Yeah. And neither will the lady talk to the guy, possibly for 2 months, right? You know, so.
Yes, plenty of time.
Yeah. So, therefore, you know, does that make sense? So, everything everybody's doing, even the really practical, it's all because there's an ultimate end in some need for exchange. Mm-hmm. Right? There's no such thing as just being practical. You know what I'm saying? The practical, there's whether your practicalness is mechanical or your practicalness is emotional. Right? Because the guy wants to get something done, he wants to talk to this person, they're annoying him, so he decides, okay, we're just going to go in there and, you know, let him have it. And then the lady says, no, no, I'll take care of it. And then she talks nicely and this and that, and then gets everything done. So was that practical or not? It was, but it wasn't mechanical. You understand? Or sometimes the emotional won't work, you have to be practical. Right? You know, you have a bandage on, there's a few hairs stuck in there, and it has to come off. You know, so you can be as emotional and as nice as you want, but you just have to grab one side and pull it till you get to the other side. You know what I'm saying? That's all. And it's going to hurt the same amount. It's just a matter of whether you spread that hurt over, you know, 3 seconds or half a second. That's all. That's all. Does that make sense?
So we can say that yogis, they become meditators first out of frustration because they try to avoid?
Not necessarily. Yeah, well, I mean, there would be some material element. Yoga is generally considered part of gyan, so there's something they want. Like that. But if it's for the point of liberation, then it would be frustration, because then you connect it with that. Because the last part of it, the last two stages, you can connect with gyan. Or not, depending on what your end result is. It could be either devotion or for siddhis or for liberation. But the first part is karma. Right? It's just you do these activities, you know, all your how you say, improving your pretzelness. You know, like that, and stuff like that. And when the yogi walks in, you can say, your pretzelness. Okay, does that make sense? So that means that's the whole point. So even these other things in between, there's an idea just that they want to be happy, though it's non-interactive, the spiritual. But when we get to the transcendental realm, there everything's activities. Therefore, officially just being a meditator will bring you to the neutral stage, but it won't actually bring you to the positive, the devotional. That's why it's not enough. Does that make sense? But we can say as the yogi, he's more advanced than the karmi because he has restrained the senses, he has regulated his lifestyle. Right? He is working according to authority. Right? Does that make sense? And his authority is a higher level than what the karma is using. Does that make sense? Yes.
So now, is it I don't miss you. If the guru is in a fine, the disciple must only work to end up his sincerity in order to understand this hidden concept.
Yes, means that sincerity is the working principle. It means that you want, because we see it's desire. If meditation is not enough, it's because it's desire. So the point is our desire now is connected to Maya. But it's a matter of connecting it to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So let us say someone is playing a game. Okay? So the kids are outside playing, you know, and they're running around and all that, and so the parent is watching. So it's okay, it's nice, it's a game that they approve of, okay? It means if they start, you know, throwing rocks through, you know, the old lady next door's windows, then that may not be necessarily approved, right? Does that make sense? I use the word necessarily because there might be families who, you know, actually is an old witch anyway, you know, so whatever it is. So, if they're playing in a game that's approved by the parents, then it's there, it's nice, because then you're following the rules established by the parent. Right? Right? And there's so many games that you could be playing. Right? Now, but there's a different taste as if the child plays that game. Same game with the parent. You know what I'm saying? Now let us say that the boy is playing some ball game with the other kids. So they're playing so many rules and so many elements and whatever it is that there's there in the game. But now let's say the same child is playing, he's just throwing the ball back and forth with his father. There's not much rules in happening, but is the relationship more? You understand? So it's not a matter of how much rules, it's a matter of how much interaction. You know what I'm saying? That may be that in some instances more rules are applied. But it's the quality of the interaction that's important. Just like, let's say, if they do play a full game, but if in the full game they forget about the relationship and they're just playing the game, it also doesn't have the satisfaction. You know, it's just like you see little kids, they'll play, you know, as much rules as they understand. But let's say someone does something wrong, right? The ball is coming and the kid drops the ball, okay? I'm talking about little kids. Now, he's surprised, and everybody laughs. It doesn't matter. Both sides laugh. The team that just, you know, lost the point, they laugh, and because all that it is to have fun. But when they get bigger, they take the game more important than the relationship. Therefore, when he drops the ball, then he's an idiot, and we don't want you part of the game, and this and that. And they've forgotten the whole point. Does that make sense?
Isn't it that sometimes we add rules to the game in order to enhance rasa?
Depends upon what it is. It means just like, you know, you add tennis rules and that just makes it more fair or makes it quicker. Yeah, it is rasa, of course, because you're just watching it. You know what I'm saying? So you make it quicker. Like in basketball, they put in an extra line. So that you can get one more point from there. You can get 3 points instead of 2 points from this line and 1 point from the inside. And you can only hold the ball for a certain amount of seconds because it was getting too slow. So you can say it enhances rasa, so excitement to enhance it. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, or the guy, he wears, you know, shorts down to his knees or longer, right? And wears a full t-shirt right up to the neck and right down the arm. Right? Always. Every tennis player wears that, right? But what do the women wear? Skirts that are like, you know, if they cover their backside, you're doing good. You know, and tank tops that hardly cover anything. Otherwise, it's not practical.
No.
It gets in the way. But why does it get in the way of the men? They hit the ball harder. You know what I'm saying? So also those traditions get added also to add more rasa to the game. You know, Prabhupada made that point, is that the reason that women's sports are so popular, it's not because the women like to watch them. The men like to watch the women in the sports. Right? Because it's an excuse. The women can wear less clothes doing the sports than they would otherwise, even though the men don't wear any less. Yes?
Can meditation be mistaken for interaction at an immature stage of realization?
No, interaction is just not identified. Because they make the mistake on everything. Because they'll make the mistake getting things done is more important than the relationship. You know, like in the Western, the hat theory. You know, it's like if you want to get something done, but the people, you know them and you're your friends and you kind of have a relationship, then you simply have to say, you know, I'm putting on my, you know, manager hat now. And then you can say whatever you like and completely roast them. And then afterwards say, you know, now I'm putting back on the friend hat. You know, it's a very clever American method of absolutely being unable to apply your intelligence to balancing relationship and practicalness. So it's a matter of stunted intelligence, not that greater intelligence. You know what I'm saying? So you apply it everywhere. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Notes. 1. The rahasya, or secret of the Bhagavad Gita, is revealed by Krishna only to his devotees. Bhagavad Gita 4.3. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you, because you are my devotee as well as my friend. One can and can therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science. Right? So he's a devotee and a friend. Okay, so now, what would that apply? What would that be meaning within our explanation of, you know, the activities of the Sankirtan movement? Anybody catch? devotee and friend. He doesn't say devotee or friend. He says devotee and friend. What would be the importance of adding and friend?
Because cultivation,
cultivation relationship, yes, but according to the nine processes of devotion, what does friendship represent?
Being favorable.
Being the
well-wishing.
And acting in that.
And what is the well-wishing?
Padasevana.
No. Padasevana is its own. Lord Chaitanya is feeling some anxiety. Why? Yeah, he wants to deliver all the conditioned souls, right? So the devotee, he takes up, you know, doing how much he can to relieve Lord Chaitanya of this anxiety. That's friendship. So in other words, friendship means preaching. Right? So in other words, you're practicing and you're giving this to others. That's where this comes in. Then this seeker can be understood. So that's why we'll say the Gogostiyanandi is better than the Bhajanandi. Right? As a general principle. There's individuals that come down like Gorkhasur Das Babaji Maharaj, but the point is he empowers the preacher. Why was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur going to the city?
No,
that's there. But I'm saying, what was the impetus to do that? That's there, but in connection with the sentence just previous.
This guru told him to preach the absolute truth, giving up all other work.
Yes. So Gorkhasur Das Babaji Maharaj told him to preach like that. So he understands the importance, but that his point was he was coming just to be create the favorable atmosphere on the planet so that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur could preach. You know what I'm saying? Because just by him sitting there and chanting, the whole world is purified. The whole universe is purified. Right? Therefore, they'll take it more seriously. Right? So that's why, you know, they do these things, but we follow in their footsteps, not imitate. Right? Because I don't think, as a standard practice, we would be comfortable sitting in a toilet all day chanting three lakhs of rounds. And not worrying about if we get anything to eat.
That last one just got rid of the...
whatever doubt I had about it, that was it. You know, that was it. Before I was thinking, maybe.
If I apply myself.
Yeah, I can handle the toilet. I've lived in Amsterdam. Okay. Two. The secret of the Bhagavad Gita is this. Although Sri Krishna summarizes for Arjuna the karma, jnana, and mystic yoga systems, right, because that's what he did in the 18th chapter, his purpose in instructing Arjuna is to establish bhakti yoga as not only the topmost yoga system, but ultimately the only yoga system that returns the jiva to his original eternal position in the spiritual world. Like these others, they bring out, they purify from some aspect, they connect a certain aspect. But the actual thing that brings you to this eternal position in the spiritual world means the eternal position is in your relationship with his Lord, his bhakti. Right? As we explained before, Buddha yoga means karma, jnana, and yoga are used in the Lord's service. But because of the conditioning, you're engaging the body, mind, and words, you know, by knowledge, right? By understanding, by practice. But if you emphasize one of them, then that becomes karma yoga, jnana yoga, jnana yoga. But it's actually the bhakti yoga that is the thing that makes it work. Right? Buddha yoga is the mechanics of it. Right? But what actually makes it work is bhakti yoga. That's why Buddha yoga, bhakti yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, the terms are interactive. We mean interchangeable. So sometimes probably use one, sometimes use the other, depending upon the situation, what's being explained, because it's devotion that makes everything. So Prabhupada always speaks about this rahasya. So that devotional element always has to come out.
Mm-hmm. So many paths were given by the Lord just because of our conditioning? to show the free will?
Somebody passes, but they're actually, they appear as different paths, but they're actually only one path.
But it bewilders the conditioned souls.
That's because they're already bewildered. You know, it's just like little kids are bewildered, right? And then you take them to, you know, the puppet show, or take them to the haunted house, or whatever it is. They're more bewildered. Right? When you take the adult to the puppet show, maybe not so much bewilderment, because they're not bewildered. Does that make sense? So they're only bewildered by their own bewilderment. Right? Just like you're hungry. And if you think about it, what happens? You get more hungry. Right? If you're busy doing something, you don't think about it. But when you stop, you know, then the hunger creeps in, closes in. Like, you know what I'm saying?
So that's, we can say it's only us who see this and become bewildered?
Basically. Like say, when you're talking language. Okay? So, everything that you're talking, are you thinking, okay, this is the noun, this is the verb, this is the adjective, this is this, and this and this?
Only
no.
In a foreign language.
Huh? Only in a foreign language. Why? Because you don't know it. So, it's necessary when learning the language when you don't know it. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the devotional process we don't know, so all its mechanics are broken apart. And so that we can refer to them. Because if I say, means the activities are being done for Krishna, right? So that's karma yoga, right? But at the same time, it's being done for Krishna, therefore it's bhakti. But I may make the mistake that the activity itself is the bhakti. So therefore is the need to explain within karma yoga that there's the activity, then there's the bhakti. So when we're trying to explain bhakti through activity, we use karma yoga. It gives us something to refer to. Like you say something where you say, oh, the tense is wrong, or, you know, does that make sense? So therefore it gives you something, but it's actually just part of expression. So devotion is devotion, but it has a science. So it's taken apart and it's given in these. So here, having explained all that, then Krishna's bringing out what's the essence. So it's actually just the devotion. All the other mechanical elements are important only because they are through which you can express. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you're preparing dinner for guests. So now you want something nice, right? So therefore you have a recipe, you follow the recipe nicely, you end up with a good result. Right? But now at the meal when everybody's eating, the discussion's not about the recipe. Right? It's about the interaction. The recipe may come up as part of a topic. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But if you become too pedantic about it, then people lose their interest. You know? Like that. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of the it's necessary when we don't understand it. So intelligence means discrimination. So for us right now, it's just a homogeneous, kaleidoscope of opportunities for sense gratification. Right? You know, as you turn, the kaleidoscope gives different options, right? You know, I look this way, there's one this way, another this way. It's just unlimited options. And that's sitting here. Then I could go to that side or go upstairs or go. It's just unlimited, right? So I make no distinction, right? And because the essence is simply, you know, how you say, interactiveness. No? So now the problem is that's what the soul is supposed to be doing, but not on the material platform, but on the spiritual platform. Is that every opportunity is the opportunity to remember and serve Krishna. Right? So now how do you get yourself from one to the other? Because there's no discrimination. Because if I say, you know, this for Krishna, then you think, whatever I do for sense gratification, now that's for Krishna. Right? So then we have to analyze it and break it down. Breaking it down, then it loses its interest. That's why the analytical side, generally speaking, is not necessarily the most popular part of study, right? Because it makes things that were once exciting become boring. Right? So that's why if it's only analyzation without the devotional process, then you haven't replaced it with something that is more exciting. So in other words, this analyzation removes the material but establishes the spiritual. Then it becomes interesting. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the point. So it's simply for how to transfer from one to the other. Right? Does that make sense? Went down.
Right. In that example of the language learning, it's interesting. I've seen many students when they were learning a language, if they focus only on the grammar, they had to see themselves speaking something. And also at some point when they had learned, the thinking about all the little bits of language had to drop for them to function as a speaker.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. Bhakti, as you
That's why intelligence is said at the platform of bhava. Intelligence is not what's powering the process. That's why it's not called Buddhi Yoga. It's called Bhav Bhakti or Bhav Sadhana. Well, before, sadhana bhakti is Buddhi Yoga, because it's the use of the intelligence that it's there. But that's why that it's also Vishwanath mentions as this ruchi and asakti are technically part of bhava. But they're just as bhava is the bud of prema, then ruchi and asakti are like the foundation or the preliminaries for bhava. You know, so there's always, you know, an overlap. Otherwise, it just comes and it just stops, and you'll get stuck there. There has to be something that connects to take you across. You know what I'm saying? There's a bridge. The bridge starts on this side and connects to that side. It's not that it's just floating there in space. Otherwise, the gap between where you are and the bridge, you could fall in between. Is that a nonsense? Okay. So here it says, ultimately the only yoga system, because technically all these other parts are only part of bhakti yoga, but because that's the only part we see, the person can only perform activity for Krishna. Right? These other things don't mean much to him. So therefore, karma yoga is how he'll relate to bhakti yoga. Right? Does that make sense? The aspect of bhakti that deals with activity, that he'll focus on. So therefore it's called that he's a karma yogi. Or someone else, the gyan. So therefore he's a jnana yogi. Does that make sense? Yeah. Bhagavad Gita 6:47. And of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me. Oh, just one thing on that before. As well as my friend. He says he's revealed all this at the end, after this. Is because, you know, Krishna then says the one who then gives this to others, that's the best. Mm-hmm. Right? So one who preaches is the best. Mm-hmm. So that's the one who's most dear. So someone who's dear is one who he reveals himself to. So that's why we even have even the neophyte devotee. He's only been in the temple that day, but he's already preaching. Because mm-hmm. That's actually the process that pleases Krishna the most. It's active. It's dynamic. Right, so not only are you not just meditating, but you're meditating and acting, but not only just meditating and acting, you're meditating, acting, and giving to others. So that combination, that's actually the point. And of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself and renders transcendental loving service. Right? So who thinks of me always within himself and renders transcendental loving service. Is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest all. That is my opinion. Right? So now he's given all these other things, they're all bona fide. But this is what he himself prefers. Right? Because otherwise mathematically you can do so many things. Does that make sense? You know, you have the halava. So you could have the halva plain. You could have the halva, you could put vanilla in it. You can have the halva, you could put bananas in it, or strawberries in it, or so many things in it. You could put anything in it. You could put,
cauliflower.
Yeah, cauliflower in it, but it's not necessarily it would come out the best. But, there's a way you could do it. So in other words, mathematically, on much of the rituals, there's all the variations that can be there that'll match people who have that tendency to follow that particular kind of activity, right? But there's a range within it. Like, let's say they need predominantly the mode of goodness to do it, but within goodness, because it's not pure, there's goodness past and ignorance. So for someone who there's that touch of ignorance within goodness, he'll have these activities. So passion in goodness, he'll have those. Goodness in goodness, he'll have those, right? And then within each of those, then you'll have again three. Does that make sense? Up to 81 is pretty standard on a breakdown. Right? Like that. 9 is also, good, but 81 means you really have the fine. So the point is it just gets more and more. So that means there's a broad way of you could do that. Just like we gave in occupations for a Brahmin, right? He could live by Ritta, which is truth, which is just going out and gleaning. Right? That's considered the best. The topmost, because that would be like goodness of goodness. Right? Then, he could beg, or he could do without something. Begging, there's an activity, but then there's humility, there's, you're bringing into the whole social thing. Or you're bringing amrita, where you're doing nothing. Right? But all these are, I would say, is that was goodness within goodness, goodness. Like then goodness, goodness, passion, goodness, ignorance. Because those all three are the best. Right? Then you have that, then he's doing business, or he's doing farming, because there's what? There's more passion, right? Or there's more material identity. So there's more passion and ignorance. Therefore, they're bona fide, because he's still within the Brahminical category. Does that make sense? But it's not recommended. So Krishna is saying here, in my opinion, that means what is the best of the best, right? But here he is backing up the same thing. Is purport, one should not become an official meditator. He who thinks of me within and renders devotional, loving devotional service, he's the most, right? So that the point is this intimacy. So that was the whole point of the second aspect of the Virat Rup, is that intimacy, that need for interaction. So he's the most intimate. He's actually understood, because he's taking all the forms, he's meditating on the Lord, taking all the forms and using them to please him as a person. Right? Then 12:2. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be the most perfect. So again, fix their minds on my personal form. So thinking about the Lord is always recommended. But, he says, always engaged in worshiping me with great and transcendental faith. Right? So great means it's full faith and transcendental. Not just, I have faith that if I do this worship, then Krishna is going to get me that Mercedes-Benz that I always wanted. Right? That makes sense. Yes.
Transcendental faith means like variation on the spiritual level.
Yeah, it means it's done in devotion. Because it means you may follow the process of devotion, but you have a material purpose. Right? But you have complete faith that God's the only one that can give it to me. So we would consider that within the neophyte stage. We wouldn't consider. But they may be very fixed in it that, okay, I have material desires that I wouldn't want to go to God. So. But then the problem is then they go to the material energy and then they disappear. Does that make sense? It's like, so the person doesn't, an opportunity is there to do some service for the deity, but that only he can do. Some technical thing like that. So for the deity department. But he needs to make money. So he doesn't want to do that for the deity department and take money from them. Right, so seemingly noble, right? But because he can't do something else and do that for the deities, he can do one or the other. So out of his sense of nobleness, he does his material work, right? Does that make sense? Let's say he makes out, he can make outfits like nobody can make, but he doesn't. So he opens the tailoring business, right? He makes his money, but then he's not doing any service for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't actually, you know, that there's some understanding, but it's not actually enough. Right? Because the other way is that, okay, they're giving me, so therefore I should do a very nice service and I should live as simply as possible. So it will improve the quality of his devotional service. It'll improve the qualities. While the other one, then you hardly ever see him again. You know. So does that make sense? Okay. One can understand me as I am. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So full consciousness means meditating upon, by devotion. Right? That sense. Only by devotional service. So that means, how will you do the devotional service unless you know the goal? Right? I want to cook something. So how do I know that it's ready unless I know what I'm looking for? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Unless I have an idea how I'll get it. So that means you have to be meditating. Right? So the person who's thinking of other things, he's the one that, you know, burns it or overcooks it or undercooks it or, you know, forgets the salt or puts salt twice. Yes?
Because we dynamic meditation.
Yeah, well, dynamic means you'll apply it. It means thinking, feeling, then willing. So if it's only thinking, then it never gets the feeling or willing. Then it's that's official meditating. Right? You know, because your feeling and willing is the meditation, because you get something from that. It's not the person you're meditating on. Is that my sense?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav Prema.